This is The Writer's Voice, new fiction from The New Yorker. I'm Deborah Treisman, fiction editor at The New Yorker. On this episode of The Writer's Voice, we'll hear Brian Washington read his story, Waugh, from the October 29th, 2018 issue of the magazine. Washington's first collection of stories, Lot, will be published in March. He lives in Houston. Now here's Brian Washington.
Waugh. Polk lived in a one-bedroom with five boys and a window. The complex sat on Montrose, just across from St. Thomas. They rented it from a woman who couldn't be bothered with a lease, or regular maintenance, or even a deposit. Rod had talked her down so that she wouldn't raise the charges on them. Rod was the one who spent the least time fucking around. He was always out tricking. Most of them were. But, on the rare mornings Polk awoke on the fading carpet of the room, he could watch crowds in the chapel drifting up the block. The apartment was next to the Chevron on Richmond and the pharmacy on Yoakum, with the diner in between. And Polk would hover by the window, humming at the sink, willing the tap into something a little nicer. Usually, he was cleaning up from last night's John. Polk tried to keep things local. It made life easier. Most guys were fine getting jerked off in their cars or driving Polk and the other boys a block from the bars on Fairview. But others insisted that they had to be comfortable, and these were the ones who took Polk home with them. Although, once, Polk ended up at Memorial Hermann. He'd been sucking off some doctor, and the doctor was on call. The doc's pager went off, and he wouldn't leave Polk at his place, so he drove him to the hospital and stuck him in the waiting room. Polk sat beside a pair of bleached blondes waiting for painkillers, three bespectacled Mexican women, and one white boy with his head in a bandage. The white boy looked broken, and he slumped beside his girlfriend, but even through the gauze, he was the only one who stared. When Polk finally asked what had happened to his face, the white boy's girl grabbed her guy by the shoulders. The white boy said he'd been cooking and he'd poked himself. Polk smiled, but he didn't laugh. The other boys Polk lived with were fine. Scratch and Google and Knock and Nacho. They worked the same bars, the same apps, hustled the same set of clubs. They looked out for one another well enough, like when Google told Polk about dragging his heels so he wouldn't drag shit from a street into a John's house, or when Nacho'd advise, after staring for months, that Polk find himself a shirt that didn't scream pato. But it was Rod who'd given Polk his crew's rules of engagement. Don't do anything you wouldn't do twice. Never, ever, ever double wrap your rubbers. Never give your government name. Find some shit that's cool on the ears. And when Polk told Rod that he didn't really get that, since his name was his name and it's what he was called, Rod christened Polk as Polk. That's what got you a regular, Rod said. You established patterns. Patterns became routines. Routines meant a sure buck most days of the month, and that's what kept the lights on. When Polk asked Rod about his new name, he never got a straight answer. The dude always dodged him. But one day, Google told him, it was because Polk was thicker than the rest of them. All the other boys wore one another's clothes, all Supreme, and Adidas, and Urban Outfitters, and Gap, except for Polk, who Rod made solo purchases for. Rod wasn't their pimp, but you'd be a fool to tell him that. He took rent from the boys. He brought food from H-E-B. He kept the carpet decent. He scrapped with the white boys on Yoakum. He made rounds at all the shelters for handouts. Kept roaches from colonizing the kitchen. And, once, after Nacho'd asked who the fuck made him king, Rod broke his thumbs, launching him into the wall. Polk called a cab to drop them at the urgent care on Westheimer. Rod's thumbs swelled like a pair of pale cucumbers. Nacho had a sprained ankle and three bruised ribs, and he wouldn't step straight for the rest of the year. But Rod iced Nacho's ribs. He brought pho from the noodle bar and menudo from the taqueria. And although Nacho still called him el pinche bendejo blanco, there was warmth in those words from there on out. Not respect or gratitude, nothing akin to praise, just acknowledgement and acceptance of the way things were. It took months for Polk to ask Rod why he'd done that. When Rod answered, it was like he'd been waiting for the question. "Because one day, someone's gonna kick the shit out of me. They're gonna beat my fucking ass," he said. "And then we'll see what you do." Rod kept tabs on all his boys, but he kept Poke a little closer. He'd have denied it if you'd asked him, but he felt for the kid. There was something in the way of kinship. Poke had no history. He'd hit the streets straight out of the shelter. Rod hadn't seen him swapping Nitas on Almeida, or huffing paint in Hyde Park. This made Poke, Rod figured, a true victim of circumstance. So Rod kept Poke in clean socks, and Rod told Poke which cabbies to dodge. And Rod snuck Poke into Minute Maid Park on an off night during the playoffs, a favor from an ex, and they walked from aisle to aisle, palming the backs of every seat, mouthing the names of Astros who'd walked the field before them, Biggio, Oswalt, Peña, and Altuve, muttered like saints under their breath. One night, they sat in Katz's, huddled over a Reuben and a milkshake that Rod had insisted on despite the extra dollar. Most Thursdays found the boys on Fairview, waiting for the bars to leak their patrons into the morning. But Rod said he had news, big news, and Poke learned not to sleep on an empty stomach. They rarely ate out, and Poke thought maybe Rod had come into some money. It was about fucking time. Maybe he'd found them a bigger spot. Poke envisioned wood floors, painted walls, no rodents. But Rod only sighed and shut his eyes and told Poke that he was sick. He'd finally caught the bug. The two boys eyed each other across the table. Rod with the lighter skin, Poke's a little darker. Rod with the tapered fade, shaved to the neck, and Poke's close-cropped, curly at the top. One a little older, the other a little shorter, both of them brown in the eyes. Poke took a long bite from his half of the sandwich. He asked if Rod was sure. "Sure enough," Rod said. "The rabbit looked sure. Nurse sounded fucking sure." "Okay," Poke said. "So take another rapid." That was the third. They glanced at the diner door as it yawned open and a gaggle of drunks stumbled in from the cold. Poke blinked through the men, glancing at their ring fingers, wondering how much he could pull. Then he pinched himself. Rod sipped their shake. He didn't use the straw. "So find a fourth," Poke said, but his voice was cracking. They didn't know much, but they knew about HIV. They knew the way it hung over Montrose. They took their precautions. And then there was the rule, Rod's rule. You got sick, you were gone. No questions, no exceptions. Your ass was on the street. And yet, Poke thought. There was froth all over Rod's lips, strewn with half-chewed pastrami. Poke flicked the end of the straw against his nose. "Fuck," Rod said. "What's fucked is I don't even know who it was. I can't even tell you who threw that shit to me." Poke wanted to say that he'd thrown it to himself, and that's what didn't compute. Not with all Rod's yelling about safety, all the precautions he ran them through, all the grief he gave them. But those words dissolved on Poke's tongue, and he shook his head instead, and he rubbed the nape of his neck with his palms. Poke started to ask Rod who else he told, but he already knew the answer. So he asked when Rod planned to tell everyone else. Rod took a long sip. He watched the crowd by the window. One of the men laughed, then glanced at their table. He turned away. Then he glanced again. When Poke reached for the rest of the Reuben, Rod slapped his hand. Soon, he said. I'll figure something out. Rod stretched in the parking lot, bending toward the high-rises, and the gleam from the street lamps made a shadow bloom in the night, and the reek of deli meat mingled with the tinge of gasoline, and Poke tight-roped the curb alongside the cars congesting Westheimer. It was late. The roads were stuffed. Rod said he was tired. They should start heading back. Poke looked at his shoes, kicking at the concrete. Sure, he said. But it was still only 11. They had the whole night ahead of them. And when was the last time they'd taken one off? Rod told Poke that was good and fine. But, really, his night was over. You're a big boy, though, Rod said. You go on and do your thing. Just, you know, Rod said, be safe. And he flashed a grin. Poke watched Rod saunter away, and then he peeked through the diner's windows. He felt in his pockets for the space where the thread thinned, which was how he ended up at Emile's. It was a short walk. The brownstone sat in that patch of grass before the sidewalk dissolved into marsh, littered with bottles and cardboard and dog shit, dampened flyers from the most recent mayoral election. Poke punched the buzzer, and then Emile's voice crackled, and the door unlatched itself. Emile was a furry man, well into his 40s. Curly hair, and his accent was stronger than most. He told Poke about his home the first night they fucked, and how he longed for his family. And Poke looked at his skin, and rubbed Emile's elbows, and tried his best to conjure something in the neighborhood of empathy. They had a good thing going, twice a week most months, holidays too, unless Emile was fasting. But as nice as he was, Emile was still a John, and Poke charged him the going rate, or more, when he could swing it. Except when Emile reached for him now, Poke did a weird thing, something beyond the routine. He hugged the man in front of him. He did not know he was going to do that until he did it. It was a reaction, an impulse. To what? He didn't know. They stood in the doorway before an audience of fronds and the strays patrolling the block and the dim lights shining through adjacent windows. Poke knew if he'd fucked up, if he'd made a miscalculation, he'd be back out on the curb. He'd have just closed an open door. But Emile only squeezed him tighter. He told Poke to come in. Early on, Poke had asked the other boys how they'd found Rod. This was after his shelter years, after he'd made it out from under the overpass. Poke spent those first few weeks in the apartment sprawled across the carpet, watching the other boys come and go, and Rod didn't bitch about it. He said they were glad to have him. He brought greasy sacks from Brother Stockles, splitting the aluminum evenly across the carpet. But Poke wasn't a fool. He'd seen the other boys eyeing him. He knew he'd have to contribute. He just wanted to know the stakes. Luckily for Poke, everyone had an answer for him. Before Rod, Nacho had been another orphan junkie working the Latin bars on Washington. He'd lived in Humble with his aunt and some pocho from El Paso until they caught him with the poppers. Then he needed a new situation. He hustled day to day before Rod cut him off at South Beach, snagging Nacho off the lap of some white boy by the door. Nacho thought he'd caught a deal. He wasn't green, he'd done this before. But Rod kept tugging until the man waved them both away. Nacho called Rod a cunt. He lost him that evening's dinner. Actually, Rod said, I just saved your punk ass. Your boy loves beating on Mexicans, he said, nodding toward the man. What you should be doing is thanking me. That's when Rod made Nacho an offer. Stay with him. Work the hot spots across the strip. Maybe slide him a cut of whatever came his way. And, in return, he'd have a place to stay at night. Every night. No exceptions. Clubgoers maneuvered around them. Nacho spat on the road. He told Rod to go fuck himself. But still, Nacho told Poke, it's hard. You know? Your boy knew the city. He knew who was carrying real money. I hadn't been downtown too long, so I figured I'd shack up with him for a minute. Cut him loose the next. Maybe case his shit too. But look, I'm still right the fuck here. Scratch and Knock met Rod the same way, just talking on the curb. Google found everyone else through Nacho. Rod brought all his boys back to the apartment, this shitty little walk-up in the toes crack of Wah. And he schooled them on efficiency, showed them how to get more for their time. Some of the boys took to it, but most of them did not. There had been others before Poke, but Rod didn't do second chances. A fight got you the boot. A stray needle did, too. One kid, Daisy, woke up looking like a rash, and this other guy, Mick, thought it'd be smart to try Tina. Rod let them both go, because he told them what was up, the way he told everyone who stepped through his door. Rod's boys would keep their noses clean. They would keep that shit outside. They would use a fucking condom, or they could pack their shit and bounce. The boys did their best to adhere, but occasionally accidents happened, and sometimes rules were overlooked. And, sometimes, Poke found a better way, or a way that was better for him. But if he learned anything at all, it was that sometimes you kept those things to yourself. Google was flossing his teeth over the sink when Poke made it back to the apartment. He'd woken up late at Emil's. The blinds had already been drawn. Sunlight fell across Poke on the sofa, cordoned by the fronds tickling the brownstone's windows. Poke snuck out of houses before. He knew how to do it. So before he even opened his eyes, he knew it would be futile. But he tried to anyways. He fished his socks from under the sofa, hooked a sneaker from the kitchen tile, and was scrambling for the other one when he ran into Emil. Morning. Hi. You snore, Emil said, like a whale. Emil stood barefoot, in a plaid button-down and slacks. He held some naan in one hand, and Poke's second shoe in the other. Figured I'd let you sleep, Emil said. Give you a few more hours. I've got a bed at home, Poke said, and Emil just smiled at that. Poke said he couldn't stay for breakfast. He had shit to do. Emil nodded at all of this, as if he understood exactly. He told Poke he'd drive him home. When the kid declined, Emil called bullshit. Don't think anything of it. No one walks in this weather. It's not the Texan way. Ha ha. It occurred to Polk, dully, as they drifted past the AutoZone and the BBs and the Disco Kroger, that they hadn't had sex after all. He'd spent a perfectly chaste night with a stranger for nothing, which was a first, he was pretty sure. If not for all the boys, then at least for him. Emil dropped him off at the walk-up. Poke waved from the stoop. Emil waved back, looking a little sore, and it put Poke's stomach in a knot, like he was stepping away from something sure, but of course the fucker was still a John. Now Google's eyes tracked him across the carpet, from the kitchen, to the bathroom, to the window and back. Poke washed his face in the sink. What he wanted was a glass of water. But after what had happened to Nock, everyone in the apartment knew not to drink from the tap. It had put him in bed for a week. Google worked on a bowl of cereal and didn't say shit about it, which made Polk feel grateful. In fact, Polk didn't mind Google at all. The guy had grown up in Bel Air, in a regular situation, but then his people were deported back to Manila and he needed to figure something out. Long night, Google said, after a while, and Polk nodded. You're the first one back. When Polk asked about everyone else, Google only shrugged. Knock's wherever, he said. And Scratch broke his phone. He's over at Apple. Nacho's with that girl, the one with the ears. Meteor was slow, except for that one guy with the nose ring. And the eyebrows? Him. Fuck. Fuck's right. You get a cough just looking at him, Google said. And it made Polk think about Rod. And it gave him a slow shudder. Sure, Polk said, reaching for some cereal. And almost simultaneously, Nacho slammed into the room. Hey, bitches, he said, sneering just a little. And he hadn't even locked the door before Google was cracking the window. Nacho reached in his jeans for a joint, and then he was sealing the paper shut. And the three huddled by the window, inhaling deeply and blowing into the breeze. The air felt crisp. A trill from some birds spilled across a rooftop. When the smoke blew back, they waved their hands, straining against the wind, and a handful of women power walked just below them. They waved at the boys. The boys waved back. They're living dangerously, Google said, and Nacho hissed, and Polk smoked. Where hides our Lord God the King? Nacho said, and Google nodded towards the bedroom. Polk blinked twice. You said everyone was out. I said everyone that went out was out. Your boy stayed in. Guess he didn't feel so hot. Something's always wrong with that nigga, Nacho said. He twiddled the joint with his fingers, sucking the smoke a little harder. But even with a wall between them, the words came out under his breath. So no one's checked on him? Polk said. Why the fuck would they? Nacho said. He'd call if he was dying, Google said. And Nacho just laughed at that. And Polk brushed at his shirt before he slipped into the bedroom. The walls were posterless, propless, peeling at the ceiling. Rod's comforter smelled like peaches, and Polk found him on the mattress, beneath its loan sheet. He lives, Rod said, raising his arms. Polk asked how he felt. Like a bag of Tic Tacs, Rod said. Good news can do that to you, Polk said. And Rod told him that his news was great. Polk'd seen sick men under the bridges in Midtown. He'd seen shrunken hands squeezing loose strips of cardboard. Polk knew that everything could and would be fine, until all of a sudden it wasn't. But today, Rod still looked like Rod, maybe even a little more handsome. We should find you some treatment, Polk said. Of course, Rod said. From the doctor, with my insurance. Don't play dumb, Polk said. You know about the clinics, all the volunteers on Jackson. And leave you motherfuckers here to run the ship? Rod said. Sure, great idea. I'm just saying, Polk said. There's places you can go for free. And places I will go, Rod said. But it's only been a day. It's been a day since you found out, Polk said. And he found himself standing. There's no clock on that shit. Maybe you got it from your first fuck. Easy, Rod said. Maybe you got it from your ex, Polk said. All up in Rod's corner, leaning over the mattress, hand squeezing the comforter, and with a speed that made Poke flinch, Rod socked the younger dude in the nose. They stared at each other. It had been as simple as flicking a light switch. Poke saw himself bashing the motherfucker's face in, grinding down with his palms. He'd always thought he could do that, if he really had to, but he knew he never would. And, Poke thought, at this rate, why would I? He hated himself for thinking it. He cut Rod off when he opened his mouth. Stop, Poke said. I know what you meant. It's fine. It isn't fine, Rod said. No, it's all right. It wasn't fair. Okay, Poke said, but nothing's fair. Poke fucked around with a number of guys. Some of them were memorable, but most of them weren't. He fucked accountants, and nurses, and gas station clerks, and students. He fucked a guy who couldn't finish unless Poke wore a mask, and another who couldn't finish for anything, not until Poke had spent himself thrice. One time, he left with a woman who'd brought him for her husband, who insisted that she stay in the room until they were done. Worse were the ones who popped the question, could you live with them? The ones who swore they'd take care of you. All you'd have to do was hang around, take a fucking every now and again. Disappear when they needed you to, reappear just as suddenly. They'd tell you how much they loved you, how they couldn't live without you. And that was Poke's cue. It was all he needed to hear. He rubbed their heads and scratched their chests. He smiled at their jokes. He did all of these things because they'd never see him again. Rod didn't mention his diagnosis the next week. That week became a month. 2 months eased into three. Moments to disclose came and went. They popped up in the apartment as the sky dimmed through the windows. And in the evenings, while the boys slunk along the walls of blur and under the pulsing base of guava lamp, and in the morning, piled onto the sofa after everyone had made it home and a lull in the conversation had bloomed and a blip propped open for a confession, and Rod would take a deep breath, cross his legs, and brace himself. But what he actually ended up doing was nothing. He'd spit some sort of aphorism, ask if his boys were good on cash, mention something about the cost of electricity, the fact that they were always wasting gas. It pissed Poke off. All that talk about accountability, doing the right thing for your family when you could. And here Rod was, fucking around, over pride. So Poke began to press him. He'd wait until they were alone, at the apartment, or on some bar stools, or in a booth of some diner. But whenever Poke brought it up, Rod only shrugged. I don't know what the fuck you're talking about, he'd say, hardly even dropping his voice. Rod wasn't delicate about it. The other boys noticed. This brusqueness between them was new to everyone. A chill. They asked, and they asked, and they asked, and Polk told them it was nothing. Or at least nothing that mattered. That's just how Rod was. But Rod still tricked 4, 5, 6 times a week. And Polk knew there was something wrong with that. Something irremediably fucked. He never wondered if Rod used protection, because he knew that he did not. And Poke tried mouthing the words to himself, just to see what they'd sound like. Our leader has failed us. Worse than the guys he's gotten rid of. More lost than they ever were. Poke didn't like the way any of that came out. So some days, Poke left the apartment, stepped through the leaves plaguing Montrose, and watched the traffic straddling West Alabama. The garages along the road spat their strew of bachata and country. Poke peeked into Black Labrador, where people huddled over their gins, and he walked past the library, across Richmond, over I-69, and he watched the car speed from one end of the loop to the other. A couple weeks later, Polk told Emil. Polk had found himself at Rod's apartment less and less, popping in only when he absolutely had to. He was spending most of his days on the streets, or lying around at Emil's, though he figured that'd be short-lived. Polk assumed that the man would drop him eventually. He'd tire of this louse with his grime and his sullenness, and his fingers all over the countertop, and his piss all over the toilet bowl. Polk waited, hoping for the worst, but the worst did not come. Emil never said a word. Emil washed the dishes. Emil wiped the counters. Emil left the living room whenever Polk was brooding. He'd return with a mug of tea, a guest in his own home. The whole thing made Polk burn, made him blush. So, when he told Emil about Rod, he only wanted to see what would happen. Emil's lips froze. He stopped moving, stopped breathing. He asked if Polk had it too. Polk said he did not. Emil winced, shifting. "I get tested," Polk said, "often." "Often," Emil said. "Every few weeks," Polk said. "Last week. And I'm on PrEP." "The pills? You can afford them?" "They're free for me." And then Emil deflated into the recliner. They lay down in the bedroom. Polk sipped tea from a mug. The sex they'd had was rough, or at least rougher than usual, enough for Polk to feel like he had it in him to say something. And Emil actually apologized, said he didn't know what had come over him. An apologetic John. It made Polk laugh. No one would have believed him. No one would have ever thought it conceivable. And that was enough for Polk to want to try again, and he straddled Emil, rocking the frame until the other man moaned underneath him. Afterward, they realigned themselves, lost in a bundle of sheets. "So," Emil said. "I don't know what your friend should do," he said. "I only know what I know. But I know that when you choose for yourself." Polk stared at Emil. Then he stood up and lumbered into the kitchen. He came back with a glass of water, and Emil thanked him with a grin. Polk allowed Emil to weave his fingers through his hair, and Emil asked him how he'd feel if it were like this every night. Polk didn't say a damn thing. He settled into the sheets, crooked his head on Emil's knee. It was a while before he fell asleep, and his dreams were not unpleasant. Polk spent the next morning dozing on the sofa. He didn't mention Emil's question, and Emil didn't bring it up. When Emil dropped Polk off, he waved goodbye, and Polk waved back, and he wondered if he'd ever see him again. Nobody asked Polk where he'd been or why he'd come back. The boys accepted him wordlessly. Scratch griped about the heat, and Google told him to get a job, and Knock called them all lazy fucks, and this, Polk thought, was just how life worked. They took the night off, opting to walk the streets of Montrose. Nacho lifted a couple of six-packs from the CVS. The night felt pregnant with excitement for Polk, as did the next few evenings. And if he felt something missing, then it sat under his gut, rustling only in periods of silence. Polk didn't think about Rod. He didn't think about Emil. He thought about cheeseburgers from M&M Grill, and getting fucked up, and watching Your Name at the theater on Greenway Plaza, and the way the flowers on Elgin blossomed beside the townhouses. A few mornings later, Polk was eyeing the apartment ceiling when Google kicked him square in the ass. "Want to hear something wild?" "Probably the last thing I need," Polk said. "Too late," Google said. Our humble leader's been taking less calls. I heard he's been turning people away, Google said, and he expected Polk to say something. But all Polk did was blink. Bullshit, Polk said. Real talk. Really. You know anything about that? Polk knew that the moment had fallen square into his lap. It would not come this easily again. No, Polk said. Figures, Google said. The two boys settled into the silence. A pair of drunks argued downstairs. Who'd you hear that from? Polk said. People who know. Polk looked at Google. He really didn't mind him. He asked why the fuck Google was telling him now. Ha, Google said. Because he's your boy, Google said. Figured if you didn't know, it wasn't happening. Well, Polk said. He picked at the hair on his thigh. And, for a moment, it looked like Google would say something devastating. Something irreversible. The sort of thing you can never take back. So Polk did a very smart thing. A very sensible thing. He raised his leg, shut the eye, and let one go. Fucking animal, Google said. But Polk looked him in his eyes and saw that he was grateful. The next afternoon, Polk was dozing on the sofa, drumming his fingers along the length of his hip, when Scratch called him outside to the steps, practically yelling. Doesn't matter why, he said. Fucking family meeting. Polk found the boys smoking in a loose congregation. They passed a cigarette between them. Why the fuck we gotta whisper when we're out here paying rent? Knox said. Getting our backs broke for it, too, Scratch said. Because I said so, Nacho said. Fuck. Polk, he said. We think your boys got the bug. A long horn went off in the lane below. A sliver of Spanish slipped out of an open window. Polk raised his eyebrows very high, and then he sent them very low. And he thought about how you only felt so much in your face. Okay, he said. Okay, Scratch said. Word, Google said. Okay, Nacho said. Okay, you fucking hear me? Well, Polk said. Let's say he does, Polk said. Hypothetically. Hypothetically? Knox said. Like, let's imagine, Google said. So, Rod might not, Knox said, but he also... Let this nigga speak, Nacho said. All I'm saying, Polk said, is if he does have it, and I'm not saying he does, then so fucking what? The boys looked at one another. I mean, what's it matter to you? Polk said. It matters because this motherfucker's lying, Nacho said. It matters that we've got a motherfucking hypocrite in the house. And you know the rules. You fucking know the rules. This shit is not new and you know what needs to happen. So he's paused, Polk said. Okay, whatever. But you think you just breathe that shit in? You think it's like a fucking cold? It isn't, Google said. Really, Scratch said. Look, Knox said. We feel where you're coming from. We get you. He's your buddy, Nacho said. He brought you in. He made you a good boy, and he got you off the street, just like every nigga out here. Did the same for me. I know where you're coming from. The rest of the boys nodded. They allowed a moment of silence to pass. But, Polk said. But we can't have that, Nacho said. We can't have niggas walking around talking shit about us too. Saying we're sloppy. Because that's what's been happening. That's what niggas are saying. Or hadn't you noticed? And the truth was that Polk hadn't. He really hadn't known. Between the thing with Emil and the pocket of tricks he turned regularly, word of mouth and reputation weren't things he'd had to worry about. But, glancing from one boy to the next, he saw this wasn't the case all around. There had been repercussions, even if he hadn't seen them. So you boot him off the island, Polk said. That's not what he's saying, Google said. It is exactly what the fuck I'm saying, Nacho said. We're all saying it, Nock said. And you're gonna do it, Nacho said. Me? Polk said. You, Scratch said. Because, Nacho said. If you're really this motherfucker's friend, Nacho said, if he's really your fuckboy, you don't want me having that conversation. And, he said, gesturing across the entirety of the porch, you really want anyone else to? The next time Polk showed up at Emil's, he brought a bag that he'd stuffed with all of his shit. Emil didn't mention it. He extended his hand. He ushered Polk in, showed him where to drop his clothes, and Polk did his best not to think about Rod's new situation. Emil explained about the locks in the apartment. Polk learned that the water from Emil's tap was drinkable, that he didn't have to boil it, or disinfect it, or anything. And it was this discovery that nearly sank him, crumpling him into a heap by the cupboard. In the third week, Polk got comfortable. He found himself sleeping in until 9, 10, 11. He'd open his eyes to the depression on the other side of the mattress, blinking at the lamps atop the dresser, and, on occasion, he'd wonder about the guys on Wah. But that only led to thinking about Rod, so Polk rejected the notion entirely. Emil worked most days. In the evenings, he returned with dinner. He brought home whole roasted chickens, salmon wrapped in bay leaves, tomatoes ripe to the touch. For the first time in his life, Polk looked forward to food. Rice and beans and fish and curry and pasta and pizza and shrimp chips. Eventually, at Emil's insistence, he tried a smear of tzatziki from Aladdin's and refused to eat anything without it for days. Emil watched him eat, sometimes talking endlessly. But sometimes he didn't say a word. Sometimes he just watched. Most nights they fucked, and then other nights they didn't. The new life took getting used to, but Polk'd gotten used to things before. He'd been living with Emil for a month when he finally asked for the favor. They were sitting at the table, hunched over a bowl of salad. At this point, they'd woven a routine into the evenings, and Polk felt as much a part of Emil's life as anything else. Polk told him he had a friend, someone who needed a place to crash. Not for long, he said, just to get his feet back under him. Emil chewed slowly. Polk'd grown used to the hair on his face, and the way that his cheeks rounded out around his nose, and the light in his eyes when he sulked. In all of Polk's time at the brownstone, he hadn't asked Emil for anything. But, then again, he hadn't had to. That hadn't been a problem at all. Just for a while, Polk said. A day or two, he said, three max. Sure, Emil said. I don't see why not, Emil said, and Polk felt his calves unclench. The moisture in the room seemed to evaporate all at once. Polk was aware of the clashing colors on the wall. Emil asked him if he wanted more salad, and he nodded, dully, but giddy all the same. Polk didn't know where he'd find Rod, exactly, but he had a general idea. He hit the soup kitchens on Dowling, and the servers shook their heads. He checked the churches on Alabama, and the parishioners turned up their noses. He checked the shelter on Rusk, and the shelter on Maine, and the shelter on Dallas, and the shelter on Dunlavy. And the receptionist told Polk that they'd found him. Rod was here. Polk was just in time. He could come right this way. But when they showed Polk whom they meant, it was just some starving dude they pulled off the corner downtown. Polk thought about checking in with the health center on California, or the one on Brainerd, or this other one across town. But he decided against all that. Help was the last thing Rod was looking for. He had too much hubris. That was the reason Poke was out here searching for him in the first place. So Poke decided he'd ride the Metro until he ran Rod down. Because their city may have been big, but their orbits were infinitesimally small. He alternated routes, switched up his plans. He seldom took a day off, seldom broke for mid-morning traffic. Poke thought about reaching out to the boys, plugging Google or Knock for a lead, but he knew exactly how that would go. About a month after he'd started searching in earnest, Poke saw Rod as he glanced through a window by the warehouse district. He nearly missed him. The Metro had stopped at a light, and Poke got off. Rod was standing in line outside the soup kitchen, leaning like a dwarf among giants. He wore an unfamiliar expression, something Poke couldn't quite put his finger on. And then he realized the look wasn't new or unfamiliar at all. He'd just never seen it on Rod's face. Poke went over and tugged Rod's sleeve. Rod didn't turn around. The line shuffled behind them. Rod's shoulders sank. For the first time in a long time, the stench made Poke's skin crawl. "Rod," Poke said, tugging at his sleeve. "Rod," Poke said, nudging his elbow. "John," Poke said, and this time Rod flinched, and he glanced Poke's way, and he did not smile. Poke waited for Rod to pull his meal from the kitchen. They found a cluster of stone bricks a block from the building. Men huddled on the lumps of moldy sofas around them, donning blankets and scarves and jackets. Poke looked away. He wore khakis and a cardigan. For the very first time, he thought he really might have moved on. He watched Rod eat in silence. They stared at the warehouses painted with graffiti. "You got fatter," Rod said, once the sky began to dim. "Not that it's the worst thing. You could argue the fatter's good. Fat shows upward mobility. Fat means progress. Growth." Poke watched Rod chew. He pulled at his sleeves. "How long you been out here?" Poke said. "Long enough," Rod said. "There was a coup. Although I guess you already knew that." Poke blinked, blushing. For the first time since Poke found him, Rod smiled. "They caught me on a bad day," he said. "And you let them?" Poke said. "I didn't let anyone do shit," Rod said. "I beat their asses, then I bounced." A handful of black dudes in snapbacks walked between them, grumbling. Rod and Poke ignored them. "They took everything," Rod said. "All the money, all my clothes. They took my shit and they locked me out." Rod flicked his fingers across his nose. "But enough about me, I must be boring you. Don't ask me how I know, but it looks like you found yourself a sugar daddy." "I want you to come with me," Poke said. "Of course you do," Rod said. "You came all the way down here to save me." "Fuck you," Poke said. "Emil said he's fine with taking you in." "Jesus fucking Christ," Rod said. "You moved in? He's got you calling him by his fucking name? Here I was thinking you'd started your own crew, running the streets, paving your way. Never thought you'd turn bitch." "Rod," Poke said, "full bitch. I'm trying to help you." "And who's Emil anyways?" Rod said. "The Dust Bunny? Terrible fuck." Poke stood and looked at Rod. Poke jammed his hands in his pockets, flexing his fingers, unforming fists. He allowed himself to think that his friend looked a little pitiful. "Look at me," Poke said. Rod didn't. And then he did. "I'm not going with you," Rod said. "I'm not going anywhere. Call it a favor. Because let's say I steal your thunder," he said. "Let's say your plug takes me in. Then what? We both just live with him forever? I mean, imagine I decide to get comfortable. Let's say he asks me to leave. You think I'm just supposed to go? You really think I'd let that happen? You think I'd just leave that shit in peace? It was something that Poke had considered. Rod's coming in and disrupting everything. Of course it was a possibility. But Poke hadn't allowed himself to linger on it. No, Rod said. I appreciate your concern, but I'm fine right here. I'll figure something out. And besides, you had your fucking chance. If you wanted to help, you should have stuck around. Poke stared at the buildings in front of them, and then at the bodies, and the trash, and the litter. The homeless picked from one another's bundles. A handful smoked cigarettes. Some sat off by themselves, lecturing invisible audiences. And Poke gave them one last glance before he spat between Rod's eyes. Rod didn't move. He just took it, smiling. Poke walked the other way. He turned around to look at his friend. He ran a hand over his face, and then he got the fuck out of there. A couple times a week, Poke used a meals card and caught a lift to the warehouse district. Some days, he posted up just across the road. He found a spot beyond the dumpsters, or the fences shielding Clinton, or the shacks stacked west of Hamilton and the feeder beneath the highway. Other days, he crossed the boulevard, staking out a position just beyond view. Far enough to hide, but close enough to see. The days Poke found Rod, he observed him. He lingered. Rod didn't look any worse. He'd become part of the scenery. Some days, he looked like the Rod who'd taken Poke in, shining with a stride, the captain of his space. Most days, he did not. Most days, he just looked lost. But Poke watched him regardless. Rod stared, as if he were waiting for something. This thing he'd been cheated out of, his end of the deal. And Poke never closed the distance. He never called Rod's name. But he kept coming, and watching, and waiting, for something. Then one day, Poke caught a ride in the afternoon. It had rained softly all morning. There'd been an accident on the bridge, and a mist settled between the alleys. Poke's lift stopped at the light before the intersection, and when he finally looked up, he saw that Rod wasn't under the bridge. He was nowhere to be found. So Poke checked the city shelters. He checked the kitchens and the clinics. He asked the squatters and the day workers and the addicts he passed on the road. Poke rode through East End and Midtown and Downtown and Montrose for weeks and weeks, scanning alleys and corners and shacks. He looked for a long time.
That was Brian Washington reading his story, Wall. This is his first story in The New Yorker. You can hear more New Yorker fiction read by the authors on NewYorker.com and on the New Yorker apps, available from the App Store or from Google Play. On the New Yorker Fiction Podcast, we invite writers to choose stories from the magazine's archives to read and discuss. This month, Roddy Doyle reads Community Life by Laurie Moore. You can subscribe to that and other New Yorker podcasts by searching for The New Yorker in your podcast app. Tell us what you thought of this podcast by rating and reviewing The Writer's Voice in Apple Podcasts on iTunes. Our theme music is by Jordan Batiste and Ross Michaels of North American Plastics. The Writer's Voice is produced by Jill Duboff of NewYorker.com. I'm Deborah Treisman. Thanks for listening.